Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, it's all about CES 2016. Some of the things I saw at the show, some of the things I liked, and some of the stuff you can buy. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain.
It's that time of year again, Dennis, where things get a little bit delayed because it's travel time.
Travel time and vacation time and cold time and all sorts of weird stuff happens this time of year.
In general, the spring and, well, the end of the holiday season tend to play havoc with our schedule for the podcast. So we appreciate you hanging out and checking us out, even when we're a little bit off kilter. But this is a special episode because that time of the year brings the CES trip breakdown.
The Consumer Electronics Show 2016.
So we talk a lot about the trips that Dennis takes, and one of my personal favorites is CES. CES brings not just computer news, but a lot of regular electronic news too, and we don't need to talk a lot about that, but it tends to be when the U.S. gets to see these things up close and personal in beautiful, shiny Las Vegas.
CES is like the first full week in January, so sometimes it's like 2 days after New Year's, sometimes it's a week and a half after New Year's. Not really a week and a half, but you get the point.
Now, CES is not a trip that you've always attended.
Well, no, it's not. Somebody asked me, and I wrote this on my Facebook feed, and it got quite a few likes and hums and haws and stuff. At the show, somebody asked me if I had ever been to CES before. And, you know, I kind of gave him a weird look and go, yeah, I have. And then I started thinking, how many CESs have I gone to?
How many CESs have you gone to?
Well, and believe it or not, I had to look it up. I went back to ninjalane.com and looked back through my history and looked at my photos. 2007 was my first official CES that I ever attended. So that makes it 9 years.
9 years of CES.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed since the beginning and since 2007 especially.
Mm-hmm. Well, the face of Las Vegas changes every 3 or 4 years or something like that. And
that's true too.
Traffic is still terrible.
Well, and they try to make it easier to get around every year. But all that aside, what I like to do with the CES breakdown is kind of walk through some of the places that you went, the people you talked to, and what you saw that's new, cool, and exciting that we can look forward to in the 2016 year.
Okay. So last year, I went to my very first keynote. I went to the Intel one. I also went to the Samsung one. And it became an event that really set the stage for CES in terms of what people talked about, some of the technologies that would be on display, some of the technologies Intel is working on that would, you know, either be in development or was currently in development. Last year, they announced Kiri, which was a very small wearable processor.
That's right. And they had planned to put this in all kinds of random devices.
Sky's the limit, basically. It's a little multi-device that does things. It's kind of hard to describe, and they didn't really describe it in a technical level, but described it in what it could do. This year, they expanded on that. So last year was the announcement of Kiri. This year was the announcement of what people have been doing with Kiri. So they had all sorts of displays. There was a musician that would use Kiri to, based on his movements, it would hit a different instrument. So it would be like a one-man band.
Oh, okay.
So it's like an electronica band kind of thing. Some of the X Games people were using it to give the audience better insight into what was happening during certain tricks.
Now that's the display, or rather the demonstration, that seemed to be all over the web for me. The two BMX riders had several of these Kiri sensors on them.
Right. They had one in the head and also in the seat of their bike.
And it looked like, from what I saw on the stream, that the Kiri was feeding you rotational speed and distance readings, and it was attempting to tell you what the tricks were based on the type of movement.
Right. So when you had somebody doing a backflip, the Kiri device would be able to tell how fast the rotation was, what the amplitude was, how high off the jump they came, airtime, all sorts of different stats. And these are the things that people watching the X Games or any sort of event like that is going to really want to know, because that's how they're going to judge one person against the other.
Absolutely. I could totally see a future for this in the Olympics and the X Games too. because how often to the average person does the run look amazing and you don't really have anything concrete to judge it on? So you just go with the opinions of the folks holding up those signs. Is it a 10? I don't know.
You never know. I always saw it as being a an addition to golf. Currently, they have this telemetry information, so when a golfer tees off, they'll monitor the ball speed and can tell how fast the swing speed was, where the ball went, if it's going to go right or left, and that's how you get those nice little pro tracers when you're watching golf on TV. If you have a Curie device that's attached to the bottom of the club, for instance, you can get real-time data on, instead of interpolating it by lasers, you can get the real data from the Curie device. So you might be able to find out like what the G-forces were on the club head as it hit the ball and stuff like that.
Very cool. Well, I expect to see these little Curie devices making their way out into the mainstream as the next year or two progresses. And as opposed to the Internet of Things, where eventually, you know, maybe everything that we touch will have some sort of connectivity to it. That's just the way the world is headed, it seems.
Yeah, well, they had Curie devices on the show floor. Well, when we went to the press conference, in the seat for all the press people and whatnot, they had these wristbands. They were white, and he was like, well, what are these for? And he put them on. During the event, they would trigger those, so they would, like, flash green or flash red. And it would be, you know, people in the center, raise your arm, and then as you raise your arm, it would flash, and then over the video, you'd see all these red hands everywhere. And stuff. At the very end, it was the audience was helping the musician create music using the Curie device. Well, they had those same devices on the show floor at the Intel booth, and you could try them out and stuff like that. So
very cool. So what do you think? Early adapters?
It's somewhat of an early adapter thing. I see a lot of potential for those small wearable devices like that. Like last year, for instance, they gave a guy a suit so that he could sense when people were going to shake his hand because he didn't have very good vision. You can do that as a real-time thing. The X Game stuff works. Sky's the limit, really.
Wow. Well, that's definitely a good way to set the stage, if you will, for the rest of your trip.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, believe it or not, that was only one thing that they talked about. The other part was RealSense, and this was something they announced last year as well, where they had RealSense on the drone, and the drone would be able to fly around, navigate a course, and if the course changed, it could see the change in the course and then be able to figure out how to get around it. This year, they announced a drone that would be less than $2 that was fully autonomous to the point where you press a button and say, follow me, and you're riding down a trail on your mountain bike, it will follow you and make a video.
I think I've seen commercials for those drones, waterproof, following things, you know, generally being marketed for extreme sports folks, so it could film you while you're kayaking, cliff climbing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the demonstration had the RealSense device, or the drone, flying around, and then they simulated a tree falling down on the path where the drone was going to go. Drone stopped, went up, went over the tree, and went around.
Very nice. Well, I know we've certainly seen a lot of these early drones crashing and burning very expensively, so that might be the trick it takes to get me into one.
Right. Well, in terms of drones, there was, on the show floor, I want to say there was at least 50 booths dedicated to drones, and that was all in South Hall. And the only reason I know is because I had to walk through the center of it to get to my meeting.
Drones are hot this year.
They are. They're super, super hot.
Very good. Well, that's Intel. Walk us through the next couple visits. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to go out of order in terms of the people I met and the times that I met them.
Okay.
But the next person on my list is Silverstone.
Oh, we like Silverstone here at the labs.
Love Silverstone. They were announcing a couple of new cases. One was a small form factor case for the 5x5 Intel motherboard.
Okay.
And this was, yeah, and you're saying okay, because I hadn't really heard of it either, but I guess it was announced at IDF, and it's a competitor form factor to Mini ITX.
Oh, something new.
It's basically 5 inches by 5 inches, has a desktop processor on it, and then SODIMM for the memory and M.2 for PCI Express's expandability.
So very small, smaller than the Mini ITX.
Yeah, way smaller.
Well, we've speculated a lot over the last year in podcasts about the miniaturization trend of desktop PCs. It sounds like 5x5 taking it one step even smaller than we expected.
Extremely. Silverstone had a case for that system, and it was basically, it looked like a Z-Box, but it had a full-size desktop stuff in it, which was pretty cool. They also had the new Raven, which is the RVX01. And it's basically taking the Raven 5, making it smaller, and then still allowing it to have proper water, air cooling with water cooling options.
That sounds nice. We've liked the Ravens in the past. I know that that's one of your particular favorites. I should mention that Dennis will be putting up a gallery, if he hasn't already, on some of these things, so you can check out the pictures.
Some of the other items they had on display were some LED fans, which they candidly asked me, so what do you think about LED fans?
Everybody has them now, it seems.
Yeah, it's like, well, is it a fad or is it more of the direction that people are going? And, of course, my answer was...
Depends.
It depends, yes. But I think it's more of a fad because, and bear with me here, 8 years ago or so, everybody had LED fans. Oh, yeah. So it became the novelty that became commonplace. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like overnight, LED fans lost interest and they totally went off the market, except for a couple of companies that it was really hard to get them from. Nowadays, those LED fans are kind of making a comeback. We have the Ring from Thermaltake, and we also have, you know, Intermax has always had LED fans. It kind of had like the Vegas light show and everything. And a couple of other companies have started bringing them back. And I want to say it's in response to a case modding movement that's kind of come from the underground back to the top.
Well, I've noticed a trend in cases where the windows are back, they're bigger, and the color schemes have gotten a little more radical, including more glass and more accents. So I think the individualization, is that a word, individualization?
I think Scrabble would accept it.
Individualization of case building is really making another surge.
Well, hopefully it will stick around because 2016 has a little bit more case modding in the hardware silent future.
We hope so.
Yeah. So they also had a budget case on display that I really liked because it looked a little bit like the Be Quiet silent base cases in terms of outer styling. It wasn't silent by any means, but it had some interior styling that covered the power supply, gave you better cable management, a little bit more room to place water coolers and radiators at like $60.
Wow, that's cheap.
Way cheap. And it had a lot of modding opportunities. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that one when it becomes available.
Very nice. Well, that's Silverstone. Who's next on the list?
We have Cooler Master. And this is a Cooler Master. I hadn't talked to them for a couple of years. But since then, you know, they kind of had a falling out. So they missed an entire product cycle with new product. And now they're coming back with their maker movement. And this is a movement with their cases that will allow the end user to kind of pick the case that they want.
Oh, I've seen this. So it's like a modular system.
It's somewhat of a modular system. You still have a base chassis. So you have the chassis where your motherboard sits with I/O connections and spots to hold your video cards. So you have the base case. This is, you know, same thing that I use on my test bench when I'm testing a motherboard. On top of that, you can add a drive cage. You can have, I don't think you can have an external drive cage, but you can have internal ones and multiply them across. So you can have as many as you want or as little as you want. You can have a single bay or you can have five bay. And these are accessories that you can buy from Cooler Master. If you wanted to do water cooling, you can remove the top panel, just unscrew it, and then you get the water cooling attachment, which is a stamped piece of metal that's a little bit taller that you can fit your radiator in so that the fans don't extend into your case too far. The plastic around the outside is always something that every case manufacturer is made to, you know, design differently to make the case look different. Same chassis, but now this is the Core blah, blah, blah 5, and now this is the Core blah, blah, blah 7. And all the change was is like they changed the plastic on the top. Well, with the maker case, you have a higher panel that may cover a water cooling system, or you have a low panel that exposes the fans. You have front panels that kind of do the same thing, different colors. You have side panels. One might be completely tempered glass. One might be solid metal. One might have a window. One might have a shaded window. So there's all these different combinations that you can buy to fit these different cases.
So essentially you'd be custom ordering the parts that you need for your build.
In a sense, you'd still buy the base case. So you buy the one that's close to what you want, and then you add the accessories on top of that.
Oh, very interesting.
They also had another display where they would offer, through the Cooler Master store, a Mata's accessory is designed for a certain Cooler Master case. So for instance, Bill Owen, he provides like custom fan grills and modding rulers, things to help you with your modding projects. Some of those are designed for specific cases. So you might find a Bill Owen special of a certain fan grill on the Cooler Master store so that you can put it on your Cooler Master case.
Oh, nice. At least you know things are going to fit, which is always sketchy when you're doing case mods.
Yeah, well, and buying custom things online, you never know. And, you know, almost feel bad about buying a $50 piece and then you get it home and the screw holes are off. It's like, well, what do you do with it now?
Yeah, no kidding. No returns, of course. Well, that's Cooler Master. I'm excited to check that out. To me, that's not that much different than when you purchase a car, you know. When you buy a new car, you shop for specific options, or you can order one that's built with the same colors and options that you want. So it doesn't surprise me to see at least manufacturers looking that direction to see if there's a demand.
Yeah, that's it's ironic that you'd bring that up, because that is an analogy that not necessarily Cooler Master has brought up, but a lot of other reviewers that have seen this case previous have brought up. You know, you buy the base model Trailblazer and then say, I want leather seats. Okay, well, that might be this option for the maker case. So,
very cool.
So next on my list, I have Thermaltake.
All right.
Thermaltake had a lot of new products on display, some of them in the TT Esports. Like there was a Ventus mouse that looks a lot like the Thermaltake G502, I believe is the name of it. Kind of same shape, but then they added their custom lighting and venting options to it. I'm looking forward to that one. It's laser, fully customizable. They have a couple of mechanical keyboards, which everybody has those these days. They announced a new case, well, several new cases. The one that appealed to me was the Core X31. Now, people of the podcast will know that we modified a Core V51 not too long ago, and that's the case that you moved into.
Yeah, great case.
It's basically a metal case with metal mesh around it to kind of give it a bit of accent. It's designed for water cooling, so you can put different radiators in different spots, up to three in the top, I believe. Well, the Core X31 takes that case and kind of pushes it a little bit further, makes it a bit wider, so you can put larger radiators in. You can also put extremely thick radiators, so like the one-inch thick radiator option. So
they're really looking for extreme cooling then.
Yeah, extreme cooling. It's a little bit overkill, but for this underground case modding movement, people are really getting into water cooling and pushing what you can do with water cooling. Not necessarily to enhance the cooling, but to look better. And in some cases, these big, thick radiators with whatever fan you put on there, what people want.
Well, you're definitely getting more performance out of it without losing a whole lot of real estate.
Right. See, they also had an expandability or an expansion to their water cooling options. They introduced some new pastel cooling fluids. According to Thermaltake, they don't recommend that you use just plain distilled water anymore. In the past, distilled water was what everybody used, and that was the recommendation, because if you use tap water, it has minerals in it, so that's just bad. Distilled water doesn't react with anything. But with some way some of the radiators are being constructed, I think it has like some rosin and stuff in there. So the water will pick up the impurities. And since it's distilled, it will absorb it and then pass it around. So then it'll be like putting tap water. So they're recommending you use their coolants, specially formulated for their equipment.
Well, of course.
Of course. A very solid pastel color. So you have pretty much anything in the rainbow. And if you want to mix and match, you can do so.
Well, interesting.
Let's see, the last thing that was on here, we have the DPS 1250 digital power supply.
Oh, that sounds interesting. A digital power supply.
I did a review of a digital power supply from Thermaltake a couple of years ago, and it came with a piece of software that would allow you to track how much power is being drawn off of off the wall, outputted to your equipment. And if you put in how much you're paying per kilowatt hour, it will track how much you've spent to run your computer.
That might be a little scary for some of our builds.
Yeah, especially if you get a couple of 980 Ti's in there and you're playing some Fallout 4 for several hours during the day.
That never happened. Never happened.
Never happened. Now they're offering this in a 1250-watt fully digital. It's a 80-plus titanium power supply, so super, super efficient. Its claim to fame is also that it has RGB lighting that is also controlled by the software.
Ooh, we got to put lights everywhere.
Yeah, that's a kind of a sub-theme of a lot of what these companies are releasing this year. It's like, we had lights last year, now we're going to have RGB lights.
And it's programmable, of course.
Of course, just like the MSI Godlike Mystic Lighting System.
Yeah, but they look good. And with the resurgence of window cases, everybody needs lighting.
Yeah, everybody loves it. So let's see, next on the list, we have CyberPower PC. Our friends at CyberPower had invited us to the suite. They had basically a lot of systems on display, but kind of the theme was a resurgence of a redesign to the Cyber Gaming console. So to them, the Steam machine is still a bit of a failure. So why not build the same machine, put Windows on it, and allow you to run Steam?
Well, I can see that. And that makes a little bit of sense, too, because with Windows 10 especially, re-entering the living room is a good option for those machines. And with Steam's controller system and their fancy new controller, you've got a game machine that can also have some practical uses.
The new Cyber Rig, they basically have the same chassis as the original Cyber, but they increased the cooling, which is a very important thing because the previous one did not cool very well. They also enlarged the chassis slightly to allow more air movement through the chassis. So hopefully you will be able to run like Core i5s and not have them overheat with just the simplest of games. They also had a Stream PC.
Nice.
And this is something that, you know, I want to say I suggested it to them, but they'll of course deny it. Basically, when you have a gamer that is streaming on Twitch or YouTube, their main machine is the one that's doing the streaming. So they have OBS running in the background, then they fire up Borderlands or Fallout 4 or whatever game they're playing. And if their system crashes, their entire stream goes down. Admittedly, that is a pretty rare occurrence. But if you have, like, if your partner on Twitch and you go offline and you have all these people coming in, if you're offline for like a second, everybody's gone. They just leave, they go somewhere else. So there's no way to keep that audience captivated and you lose quite a bit of money. By having a secondary system, like a mini ITX system attached to your main PC, you log into that one. That is what controls your stream. That's what does all the video encoding, handles your chat, handles web browsing, whatever, and allows your main system, your gaming PC, to handle all the games. You can push your games as much as you want. And if that system crashes, your stream stays online. And also, you know, hey, a lot of these guys go and record their games at the same time. You can record to that machine. That one can encode on the fly, and when you're done, it's ready to upload, or it could upload while you're playing a game.
Well, it's definitely taking the resource load off your main machine, too.
Yeah, and that's primarily the whole reason behind it is removing the resource load, frees up systems. You have two monitors on your desk. One monitor is for the small system, handles all the chat and everything. Another monitor is for your main system.
I definitely see a future for that. Now, this is in the same box, is that right?
Yeah, it's in the same box. It shares the same power supply, I believe. The system that they had on display was fully hardline water-cooled, so the upper system and the lower system shared the same water loop.
Oh, wow, okay.
It had one 360 radiator in the front and a pump, big old rad, and the whole thing was just wired together. So you turn one system on, independent of the other, and away you go.
Well, very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing more practical uses for that. I can see a lot of industries where having a dual box is going to have a huge impact.
Yeah, especially for the professional gamers. You know, on the flip side, you don't really need it. I mean, but, you know, if you're taking your game streaming, which is a big industry, to the next level, you might as well take your system to that same level. Let's see, next on the list, we have HyperX. They make memory, they make SSDs. The hot item I saw at their booth this year was an NVMe M.2 drive.
Nice. Now, we like this emerging technology a lot. We've done a couple reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the original review that we did was the Predator, and that was just a PCI Express-based SSD. Still very fast, but it didn't have the NVMe's controller. It was just using a standard Marvell controller. Now, they're going to be announcing this faster drive. They announced the speeds right on par with the Samsung that we just tested.
And one of the nice things that we like about HyperX is they market these cards with the adapter cards, so you don't necessarily have to have the M.2. Is that true even of this newer version of the Predator?
You know, that wasn't discussed. They didn't even say that they were going to offer a driver for Windows 7, so it might be an exclusive high-end game, high-end system sort of situation. So,
Well, those are still pretty cutting edge, so it's nice to see them getting in the market because competition is just going to bring that price down for the rest of us.
Yeah, and that is the exciting part. Let's see, next on the list, we have Gigabyte. They had a couple of motherboards on display. The biggest one was an X170 series motherboard. Now, I not said Z, I said X.
Because I saw that.
This is it's basically like a G1 gaming board for a standard Skylake processor, except that it is using the Xeon version of the Skylake processor.
Now, I find this really fascinating because I thought that that market had passed the gaming people by. I mean, are there gamers that are playing on Xeon processors? Is there an advantage there?
I don't think so.
We'll find out, I guess. Yeah. We'll see if it's successful.
Yeah, so the idea that they expressed to me was that these boards are designed to be relatively inexpensive because the server chips are inexpensive. I don't know. I checked Newegg. They're not that much cheaper. But there's quite a few different iterations of it, whereas with the standard Skylake, you have just a couple of big jumps. So you have the standard G1 gaming board with the killer NIC. You have the enhanced audio. You don't have any overclocking ability at all because it's a lock Xeon chip. But you have the stability of a Xeon chip into a gaming machine that should last basically forever. It's kind of a longevity thing, which in this market tends to hurt a company. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out.
Yeah, maybe they're planning to cross-market it for gaming servers and LAN machines.
Yeah, who knows? The next item I was really super excited about, and it's the Extreme Gaming Video Card Edition.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. In the past, they had the G1 gaming cards, and then they had the level below it, which admittedly I kind of forget right now. But this will sit above that. Higher quality chips, higher clock speed, and it has a triple fan cooler with LED lighting effects.
Of course.
Of course, you got to have LEDs. And the thing that I found interesting was that the two outer fans spun in the traditional direction, and the center fan spun in an opposite direction.
Wow, okay.
So I kind of looked at the fan blades, and it looked like they all blow down, but by spinning them in opposite directions, I'm thinking you might be able to cancel out some of the vibration of the fans as they're spinning next to each other,
well,
or something.
That makes sense. Well, and you're also going to move the air a little more turbulently through the components, which might have an advantage also.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how that cooler impacts performance or if it really makes a difference at all. I mean, the 980 Ti draws a lot of power, but it's not very hot.
Well, maybe it'll find a home in AMD if the concept is functional.
Yeah, well, supposedly the Extreme Gaming will apply to both AMD and NVIDIA cards. It's a different series, so they'll be available to both.
Well, I've definitely been happy with my G1 gaming card, but I can always take a little bit more performance.
Always need more performance.
More power.
All right, so next on the list, we have the MSI. We have the Carbon Motherboard Series, and that is basically taking the standard gaming boards and adding a carbon look to the heatsinks and also a Mystic lighting effect.
Now, we've done Mystic lighting here in the labs, and I found it very impressive. I'm a little disappointed, though, because I actually thought these were carbon fiber accents on there, and you're telling me that it's a carbon fiber look.
Yeah, carbon fiber look. Very convincing look, to be honest. You know, it's black motherboard, it's black accents, which was something that when I visited MSI in LA, they said, well, we're kind of going toward an all-black look.
I like that, and to be fair, there isn't really any computer advantage to carbon fiber. It doesn't aid cooling or anything useful.
No, it's just for looks, and I want to say that these boards look great. They had an X99 Godlike Carbon Edition on display there. They added, you know, the metal covers, which I thought were really, really cool on the Godlike. They replaced those with a carbon look metal.
Oh, now that does look nice.
Much stronger. More durable, they didn't flop around so much. They also added some metal reinforcement to the memory slots. So much like on the PCI Express slots, they added those to the memory. Really, really slick looking.
Yeah, great looking motherboard. And all of these things not only add durability, but they also help to shield your components from each other, which is nice too.
Mm-hmm. That's the intent at least. Let's see, last on the list, and admittedly probably the longest of the companies I visited, with only four letters. EVGA.
EVGA, very nice.
They had a lot on display this year. Starting with motherboards, they had the classified K, which I'm nicknaming the Special K.
Special K.
Yeah, and for reasons that you will understand in a moment. This is a classified series motherboard, just like the Z170 classified from before. They removed the PLX chip, so they trimmed it down, Special K, and then added a Killer Networks controller to one of the dual network keystones that's on the board.
Okay, that makes sense.
Other than that, it's basically the same. So it's a slight refresh, a bit cheaper because it doesn't have the PLX chip. It adds like $60 to the cost, and that's their cost for the chip. Added Killer Networks to it, so you have more fluid network traffic.
Yeah, a little active network management never hurts.
Yeah. Other than that, the look is about the same. It has two M.2 slots on it, but most of the Skylake boards do. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that board in the lab soon. We also have a gaming laptop.
Wow, from EVGA?
Yeah, EVGA is making laptops now. And this isn't one that they just bought and then rebranded. They've been working on this bad boy for about a year, completely designed from the ground up within their labs. So it has their motherboard inside it, their chassis design. They even went so far as to design the font for the keys on the keyboard.
Wow, so a lot of effort.
Yep. Claim to fame here, 4K display. The BIOS in it allows you to overclock the system, and not just the processor. You can tweak memory, you can tweak PCI Express frequencies, everything.
On a laptop?
On a laptop.
Wow, I'm going to maybe have to look into that. That could be fun to play with.
Yeah, he even pointed out that there was a small little button next to, in the upper right-hand corner of the keyboard, and that was the CMOS clear.
Nice, so they are taking it seriously.
Yeah. The downsides of this, metal frame, and extremely heavy.
Well, it sounds like more of a desktop replacement, if you will. How big is the screen?
17 inches, I believe.
Oh, yeah. So a nice, good desktop replacement that takes its gaming a little seriously.
Yeah. Let's see. Stock specs, basically high-end mobile processor, 32 gigs of memory. So 32 gigs of DDR4, so quite a lot. And I want to say it had dual storage options. A lot of that stuff was not really confirmed, so that's why I didn't pay that much attention. But I did hear 32 gigs of memory.
Very impressive.
Two more things. We had a video card case. Basically, EVGA is making their own case now, designed with video card cooling in mind. So that has a special chamber to help pull some of the hot air out of the case on the back. And then they allowed enhanced water cooling options inside. In a way, it kind of looks like the new Inwin H-frame in terms of the outer styling, because it has these ribs on it and a metal mesh inside there. There is an integrated fan controller with a digital display on the outside that controls the fans, so you can increase intake, increase exhaust. And they intended that the side of the case would really become the front of the case, so that way you'd be able to look through this huge window and see your fancy video cards you spend a lot of money on.
Well, I like the idea of adding additional cooling to the video card, because in most modern cases, that is the big pig that heats everything, especially if you have nice aftermarket cooling on your processor.
Last item, along with cooling, we have a modular water cooler.
Oh, okay.
So this is like
from EVGA?
From EVGA, yeah. So for the past couple of years, they've been playing around with all-in-one cooling for their video cards. So we have basically an Asetek pump attached to a radiator, and that's what cooled your GPU. They kind of taken this a little bit further, offering an all-in-one cooler, and they worked with Asetek on this, by the way, an all-in-one cooler for the CPU, all-in-one cooler for the GPU, and then the ability to have quick disconnects so you can link the two together.
Oh, so it's modular in a way?
It's modular. So they had a system set up, four-way SLI with a CPU block, all on the same all-in-one cooler, and they just basically unclicked it, clicked it back together, and I believe they had two radiators running in there. So the idea is that they will sell the components. They'll be pre-filled with liquid, so all you have to do is install them, unclick, click it together, and you're set up.
Well, I like the ability to buy what you need today and still have the ability to expand without having to buy a brand new system, which is the big problem with all-in-one systems that most of us encounter. You just outgrow them.
Yeah, well, in this case, I don't know if you would really outgrow this system. You would probably outgrow the components, But the idea is that the pump and block are attached to the video card.
Well, and if it catches on, yeah, if you get a new socket or anything in the future, who knows, you can just buy the piece that you need to add on. I like it.
Yeah. So look for those. Basically, look for all of this stuff to come out later this year. Some of these things were around Computex time. Some of them are available in March. I believe one of them was supposed to be at the end of the year. So everything that we saw at CES, we'll see again at Computex and hopefully be able to buy everything by Christmas.
So we've whirlwind through this very quickly. So tell us, out of all the stuff that you saw, what's the highlight? What's the product that you're most looking forward to?
Believe it or not, it's not here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I went to Digital Experience, and they had some kind of personal connected devices along with, you know, everything else that was at Digital Experience. And this was what they call an iHealth. Well, it's from iHealth. That's the name of the company. But they were selling personal monitoring devices that would connect with your phone and allow you to, you know, record readings from yourself. So you can track like hypertension or diabetes and then be able to take those numbers to your doctor and be able to build up plans and stuff. So, yeah, starting to use connected devices with your mobile device to help monitor how you're doing.
I can certainly see why that is a very attractive market to be a part of, and offering something very tangible back to make your life better. So very cool.
Yeah. You know, don't get me wrong. A lot of this stuff that we just talked about was extremely cool, extremely relevant. But of the items that CES, there's tons of things to see. And it's kind of hard to pick just like one thing. But that was probably the most unique thing that I found that really had a real world purpose.
Well, it sounds like a very successful trip and a lot of products we can look forward to seeing here on the site in the near future. So if we missed something, or if you just have questions about some of the things that we saw or photographed from CES, check us out on our forums or drop us an email here at Hardware Asylum.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Google or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engineering production, copyright 2016. Thanks for listening.
Computer is supported by nacho cheese. That's the new cooler.
Nacho cheese cooler? Turns
out that the nacho cheese that you get from Taco Bell is actually a natural heat conductor.
I did not know that.
So what you need to do is you get like a giant pot, like a copper pot, like you would use for, you know, like LN2 or whatever.
Okay.
And you put nacho cheese sauce in. It's not real cheese, so you don't have to worry about, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
But you put it in there, and then you just have to kind of keep stirring it so that it doesn't bake.
Oh, okay.
And what it does is it will allow you to get below ambient.
I didn't. Whoa. That is crazy. So how do you get a hold of that cheese, though?
That's the gag, is you have to know somebody, or you have to buy a lot of nachos. But if you get the chips in there, then you got the wrong consistency, because you got to strain that.
So I guess I'm going to have to get a job at Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's true. Taco Bell. If the cheese was real, wouldn't work. Mm. But something they put in there, a preservative or something, man, better than a heat pipe.
Nice.